As the Trump administration pushes a $1 trillion stimulus plan, a look at what was learned from rescue efforts in the 2008 financial crisis.
The American public did not like seeing bailouts, in particular of banks and big business, while Americans were suffering.
Plus, what last night's primary results tell us about how the presidential race is shaping up.
One of the last remaining hopes for Senator Sanders was to collect enough delegates to deny Joe Biden a clear majority.
It's Wednesday, March 18th. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. This is What's News. Joe Biden won the Florida, Illinois, and Arizona primaries yesterday, extending his lead over Bernie Sanders. Our national politics reporter Josh Jamerson has more.
What these results mean is that Joe Biden is continuing to march towards the nomination in earnest. He has now won 18 of the contests that have been held since his first victory in South Carolina just 2.5 weeks ago. And in that time, he's collected more than half the delegates he needs to win the nomination this summer. And he's winning with a broad, diverse coalition of voters that makes him poised to keep on winning, especially in two of the biggest states remaining, New York and Pennsylvania. And those are both slated to vote in late April. What this also means, if you look at the margins that Joe Biden is winning by, he trounced Senator Sanders by roughly 40 percentage points in Florida. And by winning by those large of margins, what Joe Biden is doing is proving that he can win this nomination fight outright if this dynamic holds. One of the last remaining hopes for Senator Sanders was to collect enough delegates to deny Joe Biden a clear majority, but it looks like he might not be able to do even that.
Ohio was set to vote yesterday, but has delayed its contest along with several other states in an effort to reduce the spread of the coronavirus. The pandemic is now in all 50 states, and the impact on the economy is growing as families, governments, and businesses all stare down tough choices. Take the car industry, which just announced partial plant shutdowns. It was a deal between the United Auto Workers and the big three car makers. The union wanted the companies to idle plants. Late last night, it said a deal had been reached for a partial shutdown. Fiat Chrysler confirmed it agreed to additional safety precautions. GM declined to comment on new measures and said the company has been working on mitigation efforts, and Ford couldn't be reached for comment. The pandemic is a key factor driving down the cost of gas, with global oil demand slumping and a glut of supply driven by a fight between Saudi Arabia and Russia. But with people staying home, cheap gas doesn't help families much if they're not driving. Here's our markets reporter, Amrit Ramkumar.
Right now, the national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is about $2.20, according to price tracker GasBuddy, and they project that to go below $2 a gallon in the next week or so, and they think that could even go down to a 2016 low of $1.66, and that's because demand is falling so rapidly across the world, and of course here in the U.S. as the virus spreads, and we have this heavy supply coming on as well. So it's kind of the knock-on of both of those that has people kind of concerned about what this means big picture for the economy, because raw materials prices tumbling, stock prices tumbling, and bond yields going haywire, all of this is a sign that markets are pricing in a recession, and that seems to be the main thing people are expecting now, unfortunately.
When so many people stop driving and flying for work or play, that means tough times for workers and businesses who serve travelers as hotels, restaurants, theme parks, and more lose business or close completely. The U.S. Travel Association predicts that total travel spending would drop by $355 billion this year. That level of impact would lead to 4.6 million American jobs lost, which the USTA says could increase the U.S. jobless rate by nearly 3 percentage points. Kevin Durant and three other players for the NBA's Brooklyn Nets have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to team and media reports. The league suspended play last week, with the NHL and Major League Baseball following suit. We've been reporting on the Trump administration's $1 trillion stimulus proposal to help reduce the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Congress is moving ahead with its plans for economic assistance. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is pushing for quick passage.
We occasionally have these great crises, and when they occur, we're able to rise above our normal partisanship and many times our normal positions, because these are not ordinary times. This is not an ordinary situation, and so it requires extraordinary measures.
McConnell's Democratic counterpart Chuck Schumer also stressed quick action.
So we need to act, and we need to act quickly and strongly. We Democrats have proposed a big, bold, comprehensive package of what needs to be done right now.
There's been nothing quite like this on the table since the global financial crisis, so that is a good place to start to understand the important policy discussions unfolding right now among the White House and congressional Republicans and Democrats. Charlie Turner spoke with our chief economics correspondent, John Hilsenrath, who had a front row seat covering the crisis more than a decade ago.
John, for the past week or so, Democrats and Republicans have been debating over a stimulus bill. Yesterday, we heard Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin say that it's crucial that businesses and individuals get money from the federal government within the next 2 weeks. How are Republicans and Democrats responding, and what are they hoping this bill will do?
You know, I think it's really important right now that everybody take a step back to diagnose the problem. The problem is that households and businesses are facing a funding crisis. They have to pay the bills that are coming due in the next few weeks for rent, for utilities and such. And it's probably too early to talk about stimulus. What we need to be doing is bridging through the next few weeks. You know, Secretary Mnuchin seems to have shifted his approach in just the last few days from talking about a broader stimulus to talking about getting money into the pockets of households right away. You know, when you ask about differences between Republicans and Democrats, that's a critically important question right now, because there's not a lot of time to waste. Congress needs to move quickly to get this funding forward. You know, maybe they can talk in a round three or four about how to design a longer term stimulus plan. But a lot of the economists that I'm talking to right now is, and as Secretary Mnuchin alluded to, is getting funds into the households, into the hands of households who are all of the sudden overnight seeing their hours being cut, their tip income being cut, people in the gig economy who are all of a sudden not getting those Uber rides, to small businessmen and sole proprietors whose business is falling through the floor right now. These aren't people who are, you know, necessarily going to be in normal times lining up for unemployment checks, but they need the cash. And in terms of the stimulus, you don't necessarily want to get into the money into the hands of a salaried worker who's got the paycheck coming. You want to get money into the hands of people who all of a sudden don't have that income coming in.
The government has taken steps like this before, and after the 2008 financial crisis, the administration actually got a lot of flack for bailing out big businesses and the banks. Are there any concerns this time around that there could be political pushback from voters down the line?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the important lessons that Republicans and Democrats both learned from the 2007, 8, 9 financial crisis was that the American public did not like seeing bailouts, in particular of banks and big business, while Americans were suffering, and while the unemployment rate was going through the roof and layoffs were happening on a mass scale. I think one of the things that you're going to see from both sides is a big push to get money into the hands of people to help blunt the blowback that they're going to get for trying to support, you know, the airlines. Or the hotel industry is a very tricky one because President Trump himself is in the hotel industry, or the cruise industry. You know, one of the important questions I think you have to ask is, do these industries need loans that they have to pay back? Maybe that's a way to bridge this crisis without completely bailing them out. I think the other really important issue is, how are the CEOs going to respond to this? We've seen a number of CEOs at airlines taking pay cuts preemptively. And, you know, if Americans see top executives walking away with their regular pay while their industries are being bailed out by the federal government, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but there's going to be hell to pay.
John Hilsenrath. Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot.
Right after a quick break, we'll look at how markets are responding to the debate over how to blunt the impact of the coronavirus. Policy Politicians in Washington talk about what to do about the coronavirus pandemic, but investors have to put their money where their mouths are. Our columnist Mike Bird looks at how traders are reacting to all this talk of economic stimulus.
Well, the market reaction to the Trump stimulus plans has actually been a little bit more muted than perhaps the administration hoped and perhaps some investors hoped. But it probably is understandable when you think about what this stimulus is meant to do. And what it is meant to do is prevent huge layoffs. It's meant to stop a sort of economic collapse, but it's not necessarily meant to stimulate the economy in the short term. With things being closed down, you're going to have a lot of things that just aren't active whatsoever. You're going to have a lot of companies losing a lot of revenue. These sort of measures might not actually see that off in the short term. I think while markets are still accounting for that, you might not expect to see these sort of bounces on big stimulus announcements.
In Congress and the White House, they make fiscal policy, spending, and taxes. Further west in Washington is the Eccles Federal Reserve Board building, named after the man who ran the Fed during the Great Depression. That's where monetary policy is made, and Fed bankers are taking some very unusual steps. Here's Mike again.
So the Federal Reserve is relaunching a program in the commercial paper market. It's a crisis era program from 2008, and the intention of that, while the Fed can't lend directly to U.S. corporations, is to ease financing conditions in that market. Basically, a lot of what the Fed is doing right now is designed to stop markets that companies and banks use for funding from seizing up in the very short term. It's not necessarily to stimulate the economy in the sense that we usually consider an interest rate cut. It's to prevent the sort of total collapse of those financing mechanisms. That's the aim of the Fed right now, and I think that's very much what they're concentrated on. So when you don't see these jubilant market reactions, that's perhaps not surprising. You should be looking at the fact that these markets aren't seizing up as a positive thing at the moment.
Finally, we are exclusively reporting that SoftBank is backing away from part of its planned bailout of WeWork. It had a deal in place last fall to purchase $3 billion in shares from existing investors. But in a new notice to shareholders, the company said that regulatory investigations into the office-sharing startup's business gave it an out under that deal. The Japanese investment giant didn't explicitly cancel the deal, and its notice to WeWork could be a negotiating tactic or a way to delay the investment as markets remain volatile. Representatives for SoftBank, WeWork, the SEC, and the Justice Department declined to comment. And that's What's News for this Wednesday morning. We'll be back with another updated podcast this evening, and you can visit WSJ.com throughout the day for full coverage of the pandemic and many other stories. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.